Right now, it is time for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. We often hear about the war in political terms or as an issue of military strategy, but there is also a human element that often does not get as much consideration. In an op-ed in the New York Times last Friday, retired General Joseph Hoar brought that issue up. Why, he asks, won't the U.S. let Iraqis, some of whom helped American troops and risked their lives doing it, why won't we let them into the U.S.? Joseph Hoar is a retired military general. He served as commander-in-chief of the U.S. Central Command from 1991 to 1994. He's on a phone line now from Cape Cod. General, thanks very much for taking a few minutes to talk with us today on the holiday.
I'm happy to be with you, John.
Thank you, General. We would also like to hear from you, our listeners, especially we'd like to hear from Iraqis in the audience or members of the U.S. military who worked with Iraqis to get your views on this. The number to call is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. And General, very briefly, before we go to the topic of your op-ed, as we just mentioned, the president is in Iraq and sounding, I would say, consistent with his relative optimism of the recent past. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's consistent with what he said in the past, but he continues to concentrate on the military piece of this, which is far less important than the political changes that need to take place. And without a paradigm shift with respect to the politics of the country, the military security, while it's terribly important, will not change the basic problems that exist today in Iraq.
Well, General, speaking of military security and security in general, part of what your op-ed piece was about was the fact that Iraqis who are in Iraq working for the U.S. military, I would also say working for private contractors, are in a very, very difficult situation given the threats on their lives. But you also point out the difficulty they have in emigrating to this country. Talk to me about the problem and the point that you made in your piece.
Well, I think, first of all, John, I should point out that when Congress comes back tomorrow, they're going to review where we are right now and look at our strategy. And I think one of the things that would be so important would be to also consider this problem of refugees. There are about 2.5 million refugees that have left Iraq, the bulk of them in Jordan and Syria, 700,000 in Jordan and 1.2 million in Syria. And we have thus far this year taken 190 refugees into this country.
You mean 190?
190. Contrast that with over 4,000 Iranian refugees that have come to the country this year. And that is, it's just unconscionable that we, who have been the principal cause of all of this turmoil in Iraq, have just turned our backs on all of these refugees, many of whom, as you pointed out at the outset, were working for the American embassy, working with U.S. troops on the ground, acting as translators, acting as intermediaries, because oftentimes our soldiers and Marines don't speak Arabic. They need help in determining what's going on around them. And these people have been marked in many cases for assassination. And large numbers of them, of course, have been murdered.
Well, you talk about a number of refugees reaching the neighboring countries of Jordan and Syria that exceeds 2 million. How many do you know? Do we know how many of them have actually applied to or would at least aspire to come to this country?
Well, I think the problem is that you can't apply while you're in Iraq. You have to get someplace else in order to apply. And it's probably easier today to get to Syria and apply than it is even in Jordan. But nonetheless, the process is very cumbersome.
Is this a moral question for you?
It absolutely is a moral question. We're the cause of this disruption in Iraq.
You're saying we created these refugees?
Well, this is a war of choice. Iraq was not a present danger to the United States. And we have a responsibility to take care of those people that are displaced as a result of our military action, most especially those that work for us. But I think in terms of the values that we have here in the United States, we also have a responsibility for those other people that have, for fear of their lives, have fled the country.
Again, we'd like to hear from listeners, particularly any who may be from Iraq and have family inside, and particularly if your interest is in bringing your family together, to share with us your experience of this process. Our number is 800-989-8255. General, what about the argument that if the that you don't want to drain Iraq of its talent, of its best people? And I'm not setting that up as a moral equivalency, but I'm wondering, is there ever a concern on that side that you don't want to signal that you're condoning a brain drain or a flight for the exits? Is that part of why?
Well, I think that is a concern, but it's not the immediate concern. And to your point, about 20% of the people that have fled are Christians, and 50% of the refugees have come from Baghdad, and they are people that are fearing for their lives because of the ethnic cleansing, or in some cases, you'll have, in this great, huge metropolitan city, you have people that have intermarried between sex and different ethnic groups, and they have no place to go to hide within Iraq, and so they've fled the country. Many of them are from the intellectual and business class, and they will be sorely missed in Iraq, but they're certainly not going to be able to help Iraq if they're assassinated.
So what are the rules? You've already mentioned that you need to be outside of Iraq to apply to go to the U.S. Do we have quotas? Do we have other criteria that are getting in the way?
Well, we have said that we'd take 25,000 refugees this year, and we've taken 190 right now, which would give you some idea of the fact that the system isn't working. Essentially, you have to find a consular office, but you can't do that in Iraq. You have to do it in another country. And as I said, Syria and Jordan are the most accessible, but Jordan has put serious constraints on Iraqis coming into the country because Iraqi refugees in Jordan today represent 10% of the Jordanian population, and it's affected the economy. The schools are overloaded. Health care can't keep up with the requirements, and this is just another set of circumstances that is going to contribute to radicalism in the region.
How do you feel it makes us look around the world?
Well, I think it looks very bad. For example, Sweden, that has had no activity whatever in Iraq, has taken 9,000 refugees in 2006. Why is it that a country that has been neutral with respect to this has done so much more than we have? And we're a multicultural country. I live in California. My goodness, if you ever want to see a multicultural place, it's in coastal California. We have the ability to absorb people from other countries with different views. We have loads of them in California, and we do all up and down the East Coast as well.
Well, our number to call for listeners is 1-800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. I'd like to bring Levy in Wenatchee, Washington, into the conversation. Levy, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
It's Levi.
Levi, I apologize, and welcome to the conversation. What would you like to say?
Hi, thank you. Well, I served over there for about 2.5 years, and I met many wonderful Iraqi people that would love to come to our country. I was in Camp Tikrit, and we had all these Iraqi workers working for us, and they had nothing but good stuff to say about our country and how they would love to get over here, but they don't know the process to go through. And I think that's kind of sad. And we should open our gates to them. That's who we are.
Do you keep in contact with anybody, either by email or just letter, phone conversations? Do you have any sense of how they're doing?
They didn't have internet to keep in contact, but, you know, the people I did work with, the interpreters, all that stuff, I mean, they want to come over. I mean, they think by working with the U.S., they have the chance to come over here, and we're not giving them that chance.
Well, you know, for example, you know well your own community in Wenatchee, Washington. Do you think it would be open to having Iraqi refugees?
Oh, I truly believe so. We had all the refugees come up from Hurricane Katrina, and they absorbed right in.
But they spoke the same language. They knew the culture. This would
be the melting pot. I mean, you know, there's going to be some downfalls and stuff like that, but there's no reason we shouldn't let them come over.
All right, Levy. Levi, I apologize. Thanks very much. I want to go now to Ty, who is calling from Oakland. Ty, you're on Talk of the Nation. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you. I'm not a Iraqi refugee or Iraqi, but I'm a Vietnamese time expired refugee, and I recall the war in Vietnam. We never asked America for involvement, but it surely changed the course, and I'm not saying that it's all American fault, but I think we created the mess, so therefore we should bear the responsibility and bring the refugee from Iraq over. It's unfortunate, but
what lessons from your own experience do you think we should learn for any future program that does bring Iraqis to the U.S.? What mistakes were made? What were the pitfalls?
Well, there's many mistakes that were done. The war should have been taken care of by Vietnamese, because unlike the Iraqi, the war between nationalism and communism happened at least 40-some years before American involvement.
But, Ty, I'm asking a slightly different question and like to focus you on that aspect of it. Once you got to the U.S., did it work to move here and start life over again? What kind of help did you need?
Well, I have a tough time adjusting to and thinking of my background, who is a city kid. I spoke French, but I have to, learn for the great part how to acquire English and live in a totally different society.
All right. I'd like to take a little bit of Ty. Thanks for your call. I'd like to take a little bit of what you just said to General Hoar. And General, you heard me asking the gentleman in Wenatchee, Washington, a similar question about communities being ready. And obviously, there will be obstacles: language obstacles, cost obstacles, social services. Are they relevant at all?
Of course, they are. And this is a major problem that exists in our country today, as we saw when Congress was in session recently, with our inability to agree on immigrations and how we're going to deal with this problem in this country. But this country, at heart, is a country of immigrants. It is a multicultural nation, and we are perhaps better able to cope with an influx of people that morally deserve our support and our effort to take them out of this very difficult situation and give them a new start. And with respect to Iraqis, there's a significant number of Iraqis that live today in San Diego, and two small businessmen in the town in which I live are Iraqis, and they're very successful.
General, let me ask you what touched you to write this. I mean, what really ultimately triggered it? Was it go ahead.
I think two things. The first is that I continue to maintain a close relationship with the governments and the people in the Middle East. And when I visited Jordan this past spring, everybody talked about the cost of living, the disruption, the problems, that it looked very much like the 1991 period, where Palestinians that had been thrown out of Kuwait were given an opportunity to come into Jordan. This is a huge problem, not only for Iraqis, but for our friends in the region that are trying to cope with this problem. And it just needs to be addressed. And this is the time, because Congress will come back in tomorrow. There's going to be a comprehensive review of the strategy with respect to Iraq, notwithstanding what the president has said, because I don't think that many people in this country feel comfortable with the direction in which the president is going. I certainly don't.
All right. Let's connect with San Antonio, Texas, and Brenda. Brenda, you're on Talk of the Nation. We're a little bit tight for time, so if you could compress, that would be terrific.
Certainly. I disagree with the general. It may have been Thomas Jefferson that said a people gets the government that they deserve, and I believe that the Iranians and the Iraqis, the intellectuals that he's talking about, should stay and fight for their new government, and the paradigm shift needs to be that we no longer accept everyone from every country. Our schools are at the breaking point. He was talking about their social system being at the breaking point, and their schools and their medical system. So is ours. And I just think it's time that we stop being so politically correct and accepting everyone.
General, what do you think of that point of view?
Well, I think that I'm reminded of Colin Powell's expression of the pottery barn rule. If you break it, you buy it. We broke Iraq, and we are responsible for the consequences, and we have to step up to that.
All right, General, thanks. I want to ask you further, and thank you very much for your call, Brenda. Is there a security concern, literally just the issue of screening people, given that already the U.S. Is screening students, et cetera, from Arab countries generally, to causing great strife in doing so and disagreement and argument? But is that a concern?
I think that that the alternative to not taking in people who have risked their lives to serve the United States government is a far greater security concern in the long run. And I would suggest to our listeners that they might try and check Human Rights First website, which has all of the statistics associated with this refugee problem. I think if they're interested in getting some more information, I think we have to deal with it. We caused the problem.
General, thank you very much. I just want to tell listeners that there's a link to your op-ed, Abandoned at the Border, at npr.org/blogofthenation. You can also download and listen to all of our opinion page segments online. Go to npr.org/talk. General Richard Hoare, retired General Joseph Hoare, served as Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Central Command. Once again, General, thank you for the time. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm John Donvan in Washington.